Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St. Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to The Podyssey. We're here recording the August version of the Odyssey podcast. Podyssey here in the studio on a very, very hot day. Nicholas, hello.
Hello.
Roberto, hello.
Hello.
There's a voice missing. It's Sam. Sam has no loyalty to this podcast. He's sodded off on holiday.
He's travelling around Belgium.
Yeah.
All sorts of places.
He'll be listening to this and probably shaking his head at some of our views. Sam, hope you have a nice trip wherever you are. Rush back because we miss you. But chaps, how's it been going? What have you been up to? What have you been watching over the past month? And I've got an update for you, Roberto, by the way, but you go first.
Okay. Well, I went on holiday for a week shortly after our last podcast, so I haven't seen as much new stuff. I've been watching a few classics. I did watch the new Freaky Friday in the cinema actually. And that actually because I'd never seen the original, the Lindsay Lohan. Well, I say the original. Same. There's been like five of them now, but the Lindsay Lohan, Jamie Lee Curtis one, I'd never seen it, and I watched it. And when it started, I was like, okay, this is just a bit of homework just to get caught up. I ended up really, really liking that original one. And then the sequel's got some great stuff in as well. So, new discovery, new.
So who plays the switcheroo pair in the new one?
Well, it's Lindsay Lohan and Jamie Lee Curtis are back.
Oh, I see.
Which is really great to see, especially Lindsay Lohan. Kind of her renaissance has truly begun now, I think. And she, both of them, the comedic timing between both of them is still like really good. This time a little more confusing. It's Lindsay Lohan's daughter and her stepdaughter swapping with Lindsay Lohan and Jamie Lee Curtis this time. So it's a lot more chaotic.
Yeah.
But the hijinks as a result are much more. The ante has been upped, as all great. Well, all sequels do.
Nice. So I recommend. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. It's a lot of fun. I saw it with my mum, and she I haven't heard her laugh that much in a cinema in a while. So I feel like that's a good sign, you know.
A ringing endorsement from Roberto's mum. I'm pleased for Lindsay Lohan because I feel like she's been one of those victims of 10 years ago. I'd have been one of the idiots who just opened a newspaper like, "Oh, Lindsay Lohan looks mad," and turned it over.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we now will have a better understanding of the challenges young women in the public eye face. In the media, I feel like she's been really through that washing machine. So
definitely.
I'm pleased to see her back and working.
And definitely with like just the general kind of thing with child actors as well.
Yeah,
like when you start in that industry, it's because and back then as well, when there was less safeguarding, it's such a crazy industry. And I think you just,
It's almost like I hate to be this way, but like a subgenre within itself now. It's like everyone knows that child actors are part of like this club of like, you know, sort of, they've had very much successful lives since the beginning, but have sort of gone through so much public scrutiny that you sort of begin to, they get a bit forgotten about.
Definitely,
like professionally and probably, publicly. And then they get the upsurge, which is the best thing possibly, especially for Lindsay Lohan and even to a point, Jamie Lee Curtis, I suppose, is, you know, she's been through a lot.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
She had the Oscar win, but, you know, there are certain times when they've been out of the public eye and or not on screen, and you sort of wonder, like, if they'll return. And they make such grand returns that you're like, you want to see more of them now.
Definitely.
Yeah, it must be strange being an actor, because obviously we're all going about our business not thinking about it too much, but actors go really in and out of vogue. So me and Jen watched a thing on Netflix the other day. It's an old programme, right? It's called The Jury. Don't know if I can honestly recommend it. But anyway, a young Gerard Butler appears as a kind of
sweet
actor in it.
Oh, nice.
And I was thinking, like, he's back now as the dad in Training Your Dragon and all that.
Yeah.
I feel like he was one of those who was the guy for a bit.
Definitely.
Dating Jennifer Aniston, like leading man on films. Kind of disappeared into things like Olympus Has Fallen 4 and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, he had one of those, but yeah.
He was in a film even this year. It was like the second Den of the Thieves film. He did like a second one of that. I remember like seen people on Letterboxd go, look, nobody asked this sequel, but I'm loving it. I guess it's tough business, isn't it? It's like, yeah, just depending on whether you're a hot property sometimes. But, you know, it, again, like you said, there's always a lot of, especially the early 2000s actors, like, you know, Josh Hartnett.
He's made a comeback, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's, you know, there's a renaissance is happening. Brendan Fraser as well, you know. It's all kind of...
Oh, yeah, he had a bad time of it, I think.
Yeah.
And he came back and won an Oscar.
Yeah, for the
Whale, yeah.
He's got a new film coming out. I saw this trailer.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't remember.
Rental Family.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it looks good. But yeah, always great to see stuff like that.
So, Nick, what have you been seeing? Anything that we should be checking out or avoiding?
I spend a lot of time at the cinema. A lot of the time now, though, I'm watching a few things at home. I also did watch for the first time Freaky Friday with Lindsay Lohan and Jamie Lee Curtis. I enjoyed it for what it is. You know, it's very, like, much a throwback classic. And I can understand why it's a gem to a lot of people. Because it did have some, more than enough, I actually found myself, like, laugh out loud.
Definitely, yeah.
Moments in it, because of their hijinks. In anticipation to watch the second one, which I haven't yet, but I will eventually. I have watched, you know, most of the blockbusters, I saw Weapons most recently.
So excited for this.
I was going to leave it till later. I won't make
talk about it later, but I want to know about this as well.
I enjoyed that very much so. And then, you know, Superman, Fantastic Four, Jurassic World, The Naked Gun. I've watched
The Liam Neeson one.
And then the new Liam Neeson remake.
Interesting.
Which, all of them have been great. All of them, I've really enjoyed my time at the cinema this whole summer. I think every single film, one of these films has had such a unique take in their own genre that it feels like it's a really interesting summer to be at the movies, for real.
It's good, isn't it? And funny enough, we'll talk about that in a second. Because we're going to talk about blockbusters and the fact that we've got Jurassic Park is out, Superman is out, we just had Mission Impossible. Like, it feels like but they're making another Spider-Man. It feels like big blockbuster budget, you know, popcorn-y films are back.
Yeah, I can't say why now is like the resurgence more so. I suppose, you know, it being summer, that's where you save like your big named drop movies, you know.
So I'll tell you what, save this the next part. We'll talk about this.
We will.
Because I've got a theory on this as well. But so some good stuff going on. A Freaky Friday can still go and see. Like, Gun you can still go and see, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah, Naked Gun coming up. Superman's coming up very soon. I think our debut is in a few days' time. And all of it's still pretty much available to come and see at the Odyssey.
Lovely stuff. We've said it before, we'll say it again. Cinema is back. Cinema is back. Right, folks, we'll end that there and we'll go into part two. We're going to be discussing some of these blockbusters. And we've also, in honour of the new Superman film, we've all gone back and had a look at the Christopher Reeves original. Now, okay, don't write in. There's probably a 1950s original with someone else other than that.
Yes, but yeah.
The most living memory original Superman we could go back and watch, we've had a look at. So that's all to come in part two. Welcome back to part two of the Podyssey. Still minus Sam, who is off gallivanting around Europe somewhere on a train ticket. Sam, we miss you. Come back. Right, chaps. So, going to talk a bit about Superman. So we'll get that done first. And we're going to talk a bit about how a lot of old classic kind of blockbusters have returned. So we've got there's a Fantastic Four film. They're making the new Spider-Man, I've seen. The new Superman is obviously out. There's a Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. It's not called Jurassic Park. There's another Jurassic Park. One in the cinemas.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot going on. But first of all, Superman. What do we think? Nick, you can go first.
The film itself is great. It's acted very well by David Corenswet, who plays Superman / Clark Kent.
That's a big, not risk, but that's a big responsibility.
It's
that could go
ask.
Wrong. Yeah. Because I've never heard of him.
Well, first off, he's been in the industry for a little bit. I've seen a few TV shows, and he was recently in Twisters, sequel that came out.
Yeah, I saw that.
He was sort of one of the side
characters. Yeah, he was like one of the scientists, which I remember seeing him going like, oh wow, he's gonna be, how I sort of was like, mummy, he's Superman next, and she was like, what?
Yeah, funnily enough, I think he's wearing glasses in Twister, so it's like,
oh, really?
The Clark Kent-esque on him.
Yeah.
And they've got a great cast as well. Rachel Brosnahan, who plays Lois Lane, who I saw lovingly in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is in one of the Amazon shows. And then you also have Nicholas Hoult, Lex Luthor.
He's doing well, by the way, Nicholas.
Yeah. Something about resurgence. Like, I feel, I know he's been in it like consistently, but you feel like I haven't seen him in a big movie. I know he was in The Menu like last year, like that. But
last year,
he might have been missing for a bit, and then suddenly he was like, I'm back in it now.
Yeah, he was in last year. He was in Juror Number 2. He was in that film, The Order. And he was in something else last year.
He was in that mad film, but they've said it called Renfield.
Yes.
Which is this Cage.
Barmy, but I think I liked it. I liked it.
Do you know that's directed by the guy who directed Lego Batman? Did you just start?
Is it?
Lego Batman up for the Odyssey Bingo.
Yeah, I mean, that means that's officially 100% of the time that we've mentioned it. I didn't know that. Yeah, okay, I definitely like it.
Auteur thing going on with Batman. Bat-related,
related.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage's Batman, like fantastic. Dracula. Sorry.
Yeah.
Even before you see it, you're like, yes, please.
Yeah.
And then you see it, you're like, oh, absolutely, yes, please.
Yeah, definitely.
So Nicolas, he's Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor. He plays him such a so megalomaniacal. I mean, like in the most campy comic book way that you really want to be honest. And the reason I keep saying it's like so much a comic book is because they've got so many facets of like humor and sort of heartfelt moments, but there's also action, there's adventure, and I think mainly it really comes down to Superman, the actor David Corrin, who just manages to pull off both roles. Because I do feel like it's not one singular thing; it's very two separate.
Yeah, because for it to work, Clark Kent has to be same but different from Superman.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And he plays it so well. They have great chemistry with Rachel Brosnahan playing Lois Lane, and also chemistry with Nicholas Hoult, which you can sort of see. I don't know if anyone sort of like saw the marketing things for it.
Yeah.
The three of them always look like they're having a great time together just off screen as well. And I think that really counts for something. It proves that the relationships seem actually quite real in on screen, you know. You've seen it as well for both.
Yes, I have. Definitely got to agree with you. I think David Corrin Sweat, similarly to Christopher Reeve, both from Juilliard, which is like the kind of prestigious acting school.
Oh,
same acting school.
Would you think like you'd actually aim for like someone who wouldn't go to like a kind of big prestige or old Shakespearean sort of thing, but it kind of seems to have reworked. And there's a clip that's just come out recently that James Gunn has also spoken about as like being like one of his favorite moments on set, James Gunn being the director, by the way. And it's like there was a bit of a kind of debate with David Corrin Sweat and the director on this one scene. And there's this clip that's showing James Gunn being like really passionate about his directing, right. And David Corrin Sweat kind of like really taking it on board, and then he goes out and like nails the scene. And it's just everyone's been going like it. Yeah. Just like one of those wholesome moments.
I think it
moments.
Does make sense to have a really well-trained actor as Superman, because he kind of has, he's anguished by being different.
Yeah.
And then he's like two people, like Nick said, he's Clark Kent and he's Superman. That's tricky anyway. It's actually a weirdly deep character for what you would imagine is a really superficial character. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? There's actually a lot going on there.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. And I think I'm going to bring it up in the discussion about Superman, but like they are so like different personas and they are acted so differently, but very well that you believe it. Like you can understand. Whereas what with Vic,
exactly
the difference.
Yeah.
Like, oh, put glasses on and you curl your hair a little bit more. But it is really such a different persona and style that it like, either the viewer, you're sort of like really impresses you, the acting ability. Even though, it's not too much of a difference, but you sort of get why Superman like is the way he is with both of those things in tow. Because as Clark, he's sort of like, that's the thing as well. We're in the movie. It's very much like Lois knows that Clark
is his new one,
Superman. So it's sort of exploring.
Oh, so in this one, so Lois Lane knows.
And doesn't really describe how long they've been together, but they are together. You know, sort of like on and off in a way. And I think that's just due to, that's sort of explored as well, like due to the fact that he's a hero and he has to go and save the world first. Like that's because that's what he's known. And that's really like a great part of that whole film is just like exploring the duality of that while also being like one of the greatest heroes on earth. Like it's a great movie. Definitely yeah. recommend it.
Okay, so good. So we, as Nicholas alluded to there, we are going to chat a bit about the Christopher Reeve Superman shortly because we've all had a watch along of that. But first of all, yeah, we were just going to talk more generally about, there's a lot of these big budget, big make or break popcorn, get people in the cinema films coming out, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got Superman, we've had Jurassic World. I think you've both seen
it now, yeah.
Sorry. Roberto, what did you make of that? I'm keen to see it.
Yeah, I wasn't. So, do you know what's funny? I haven't seen the original Jurassic Park for like eons now. So I keep seeing all these new ones. As someone who was like, so I remember watching the first Jurassic World when it came out, and I remember like quite enjoying it. But then I remember that second one came out, and I was like, "Oh, this is not it, Chief." And then that third one came out, and I was like, "This is." I remember watching. I just that's maybe I don't even like.
Good. Don't even diss the third one.
The third one, Jurassic World good. Dominion.
No, it was about Jurassic World. I thought you had Jurassic Parks.
Yeah, the third of both.
I get you about the world.
The third of
trilogy.
Both blocks.
Like,
yeah, not great.
Definitely weak. But even this Jurassic World Dominion's like this crazy thing of like. There's like this scene where I think we were talking. Me and my. We're talking about one of my colleagues the other day. There's a scene where like Chris Pratt's on a motorcycle in like Venice being chased by a raptor,
yeah,
which should be like, oh my god. And I just remember watching it going like, I don't care. I literally could not bring myself to care.
There's something, isn't there, about these films? So we'll get on to the new one in a minute, but there is something about these films where like, what's the phrase? I'm going to mangle this phrase, but you know, like, absence makes the heart grow fonder, yeah. Familiarity breeds contempt kind of thing. I thought the first Jurassic Park was amazing. Mm. I thought the second one was amazing. I think probably quite enjoyed the third one just because it had been a while.
Mm.
And then they started rolling out and an unthinkable thing happened a few years ago where I didn't really know which Jurassic Park people were talking about and maybe even if I'd missed one. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Like, definitely, yeah.
They were such massive events and then a few came along in a kind of 3 or 4 year bit.
Yeah.
They all had Chris Pratt kind of easy yeah. doing after.
Yeah.
And I sort of stopped caring a bit, but also they became, I don't know, they definitely lost their specialness, which isn't a word. So has that come back a bit in this one?
I would definitely say this one's the best of.
I feel like this was better than
this new crop.
Yeah, I thought it was better than all three of those Chris Pratt ones, to be honest.
I think kind of it does away with like the exposition. It kind of like there's still exposition, but like it really kind of. It's a pretty lean, like, you know, they set up the characters, they go, and then there's a, like quite a few dinosaurs.
And it still is slightly attached to Jurassic World Dominion as well.
Yeah, like,
set in the future.
So give us the premise, in as much as, you know, no spoilers, but like what's going on in this new one? I mean, there's dinosaurs, there's an island, we know this.
It's funny, and I was trying to figure out if this was an intentional choice. What you just said about them kind of oversaturating the series. In this one... People have gotten bored of dinosaurs like being all over the world now. Like they're like, we don't really care anymore. And dinosaurs have started to die out because the climate of like all these places they're in just like kind of doesn't facilitate them. Mm. So they've all kind of now moved to close to the equator where they need to go to get kind of research for.
Yeah.
They need to get like samples from some of these dinosaurs for like medicines and cures for this company. Which I think that was one of the good things about it was this kind of they kind of explore. You know, doing something for a corp, which, and this is in every Jurassic Park film in some form or fashion, but in this one, I thought it works way better than the last few, where, you know, do this for the corporation or do this for the benefit of actually other sure. people at the cost of, like, you don't get rich, but maybe that's better. There's definitely feels like more of a human touch to this new one, I'll say, in some of the kind of conversations the characters have. Definitely feels a little less like a, whoa, they're all back. The dinosaurs are back. Yeah. They're going to fight.
Good dinosaur action, though, because normally even the bad ones come up with something brand new, like, normally.
Yeah, I'd say Gareth Edwards, you could tell he's, like, put his stamp on it a bit with the action. You know, he's good at large-scale set pieces. And I think, like, you know, getting him as a director is a good move. I think that will actually feed into what I'm going to talk about with recent blockbusters and why I think there's more of a resurgence of them.
Well, so yeah, let's get on to that. So Nick, first of all, give us your quick take on Jurassic World, and then we'll get on to the recent...
Jurassic World, yeah, as I said, I enjoyed it more than all the three Jurassic Worlds before this. I agree that it has more of a human touch because you actually do begin to care about the characters. They very much are their separate entities, but are all doing it for the, like, moral, like, sort of, like, an adventure's sake. And I know this is not the best way to sort of word this, but, like, none of them are scared of the dinosaurs. Like, they just seem like they're getting on with it. They know it's there. It's not just, like, used as a tool for an action set piece. It's fully like, oh, this is integrated into the... sort of, you know, the base model of it now. And
that's clever. So it's almost like, what would people be like if they just were used to dinosaurs
right, being around? Yeah. A little bit, yeah, like, because it's sort of integrated into the story. It's attached to what the third one ends with, you know, dinosaurs being in actual popular cities, but they remove them all. And so then when they do actually decide to visit the dinosaurs for medical purposes, it's more of a bit like an actual, like, a treat. Do you know what I mean? Like
that scene with Jonathan Bailey,
yeah,
who is the highlight of the film. I would actually say he's
that,
like,
I nearly cried at that moment.
He's really good in it. He like really sells you on the fact that he's like loves dinosaurs and
yeah,
is like doing it for the sake of the world. Yeah,
and he's flute solo.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. I especially like that part where he was like telling Rupert Friend, like, you know, we messed up the planet and the planet will like throw us off when it like gets tired of us. So I thought I was like. I don't know. I like it. I like when films kind of confront, you know, human activity as a negative. Sometimes, yeah, it kind of adds.
And he had the right director for it as well, considering he directed Gareth Edwards previously directed like Rogue One and The Creator, and he also did Godzilla as well. So he's had his fair share of like monster representation.
He's working in all the big sci-fi franchises.
Rogue One is a great film, by the way.
Yeah, I need to rewatch. I haven't seen it since it came out, but
good.
So Jurassic Park, worth having a look. I'm definitely going to see it because I've watched all of them so far. I enjoyed all of them, even though I didn't like that much. just before we leave Jurassic Park, Scully Johansson good?
Yes.
Yeah.
And nice. She's wanting to do this for ages.
Yeah, I'm so pleased I read that. Like,
And you could feel that. You could actually sort of feel that on screen. Like, I'm not going to say that she wasn't good as a Black Widow or interesting, but it was definitely more of a human feel to the character than anything else. Yeah, she's wanted to do it for a while.
Yeah, that's true. You don't often see her just playing a normal person. Do you know what I mean? She's always quite aloof or different or removed. You don't normally see her just being a normal fan. So yeah, that's interesting.
She's just made her the highest grossing action female action star, right? Something like that.
Oh, really?
Yes, I think it's a film, yeah.
This new one.
Friend.
Good for her. Well, Scarlett, I know you're a listener. Congratulations. So Roberto, you say you've got a theory on why Blockbuster returned.
I think so. I think remember we kind of had a similar conversation last year about like the summer Blockbuster kind of making its comeback. But then I think I remember like last year kind of getting through the year and going, actually, I don't know. That was not as I think. So okay, so just let's start this off from in chronological order, as it were. I think we got Barbenheimer in 2023, right?
Yeah,
and
prove that people would go to the cinema.
Prove that people would go to cinema after streaming definitely kind of took over after, you know, the pandemic. But also, I think maybe what we're seeing the impact of now as well from that is I think studios have realized you can give a director with a big voice, a creative voice, a massive film like that, and you can be both commercially and critically successful because of that voice. I think, you know, Oppenheimer was a Nolan film through and through. You know, it had all of its trappings, whether you like them or not. And then Barbie very much, you know, truly benefited from having Greta Gerwig, you know, a female voice, make that film and really kind of lean into, you know, some truths about, not that I have any right to be speaking about this, but, you know, truths about womanhood that kind of really came across in the film.
Smaller than Barbie, of course. Her smaller films are really that way.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They're definitely really kind of strongly vocalising the female experience and the female point of view.
Yeah.
So it stands to reason that even one with a much, much bigger budget is going to do the same thing.
Definitely. And then I think it really worked that it balanced the humour, balanced the really heartfelt moments, and it was like quite a visually, you know, striking film with like the amount of pink they threw into it. I think especially this year, we're really seeing that studios are now a bit more willing to give directors more of a voice. I mean, Superman, directed by James Gunn, you definitely tell with how they pretty much throw you straight into this already established comic book universe. You can tell it's directed by someone who loves comic books. With Sinners as well, which I think is another kind of big blockbuster this year, it's done really well. You can tell Ryan Coogler really put his stamp on it.
And even
just some of these like small things like Jurassic World, they get Gareth Edwards to handle it. The Naked Gun, they've got Akiva Schaffer, who's like a Lonely Islands member, and he did... Hot Rod? Has anyone seen Hot Rod? I keep saying this every time.
I know you mentioned it. I've not seen it, but I have heard of it. I know it's got Andy Samberg as well.
Yeah, yeah, go back and watch Hot Rod. It's directed by the guys who's done the new Naked Gun, and it kind of shows you it's in safe hands because it's just pure, like, absurd satire or even spoofing, and it really works. So, yeah, I think that's the reason. I think directors are getting more leeway in directing these big budget films, where usually the studio muscles in and kind of says change this, change that, and we're seeing a bit of a lax on that, I think, and I think that's really benefiting people's desire to actually go watch these films.
And do you think there's a bit of a Marvel shaped hole to fill as well?
I think so. Because, yeah. Well, I know Fantastic Four's done really well. I haven't seen it myself yet, and I know that even that film has way more of a personal stamp on in terms of the set design. You'll be able to attest to this, I imagine. Like, the set design's very, you know, well, it's very practical. It's very, like, inspired, like, retro futuristic. Even Marvel now are trying to bring in kind of what you'd call, like, smaller talents to kind of fill bigger roles on their films. Thunderbolts kind of did that a lot with its.
I feel like a lot of the films you're talking about all have a vision as well. Like, they all clearly come from sort of these modern auteurs, you know, like genre cinema as well. So, you know, James Gunn with comics and Ryan Coogler with, I suppose, like, black experience stories as well, being black and what that means to the world. And I think all of them... I also don't necessarily agree that, like, obviously your Superman, your Fantastic Four have big budgets, but... I think Sinners was like a massively budgeted movie, as far as I was aware.
Maybe not relatively, but I think like it kind of
still over $100 million.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with film. Like, I remember in 2023 that like Indiana Jones bombed, The Flash bombed, and they were like, "Why are these massive films bombing?" And it was like, because your budget was like, $500 million,
right.
And nobody's seen Indiana Jones in years.
Yeah,
and
Flash. You give yourself almost an impossible number to recoup there.
Yeah, and then The Flash was like, I mean, The Flash was admittedly hit with like many, you know, the Ezra Miller controversy. You know, clearly aping No Way Home's success, and then also just some of the CGI in that film was evidently from trailers, like, not very good. But yeah, they were giving these like these very studio handled products, like massive budgets, and they were bombing, and they were like, what's going on? I think they've looked at Barbenheimer as a kind of a key event.
Maybe I feel like, you know what I feel like as well, to that degree, I feel like maybe there were too many cooks in the kitchen, and they were just sort of refined.
Trying to focus group these films, yeah.
So they've been like, they focused way too much on maybe like participation from an outside source, like fan screenings, because I think sometimes that can be a bit of a detriment to certain things, like, just because of the way the internet is as well now, and social media reactionary things, it is like very much just like a quick reaction and not like a full opinion or judgment upon something that's obviously not what people have seen as well. So I think what my original point is that I feel like they have sort of refined the crew to a point like, because James Gunn directed and written, Ryan Coogler directed and wrote the scripts, and all of them have majorly probably got on with producing roles as well. Actually, do want to bring up Weapons to a point as well.
Oh yeah,
like directed and written by Zach Cregger, and this is his second major feature.
Yeah,
it's made just like one of the biggest openings of the year on a horror, which is unheard of. But Sinners is one of them. But that's a testament to that. It's like, it's very like original.
They're kind of leading into the storytellers, because that's what works.
Please do.
So, yes.
Yeah, please do.
I've got another slightly sideways theory on this. You want to hear it?
Yes, let's go.
I think, and bear with me on this, I think We Will Rock You, the Queen film.
Oh, the Freddie Mercury, Rami Malek.
Yeah, played a small role in this, and I'll tell you for why.
Please tell us.
Everybody involved in making it kind of hated it while it was being made. It's like,
yes.
And every time they screened it, people were like, no, this is no good. And Queen fans are like, no, not going to watch it. And the rest of the general public who they were speaking to in focus groups like, no, don't care about Queen anymore. Mm. And then it came out and the whole country was like, yeah, 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 I'll buy this. I like it. So it's almost like defied all the tests that these big studios put the films through. And I think it maybe just made people look at things like focus groups, test screening, social media responses. Obviously, those things still matter if you're a big Hollywood machine. Mm. But I think they maybe just thought, oh, maybe that isn't the whole story anymore. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Or even possibly giving, like the director being a part of the test screening as well, like help. Because I think I actually saw a video from, he was the guy who directed Shazam. I forgot his name. David F. Sandberg. Because he started with like low budget filmmaking, and he does like YouTube kind of filmmaking tutorials even to this day. And he talks about how like he kind of like actually takes, he goes to like the focus, sure, or like the test screenings, and he kind of like actually reads through the cards himself to kind of figure out certain things. Because I think sometimes the test screenings get a bit demonized, but I think it is more like sometimes when the studio kind of misunderstands what's trying to be said in the test screenings. Mm-hmm. You know, they misinterpret things like all the time.
That's fair for some reason.
Yeah.
Because they're just thinking purely on a basis.
They've also got a board of members that are also sort of being test screened upon and just like, or like looking at those audiences and sort of scrutinizing that as well, you know. I get that, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's all miscommunication maybe to a degree.
Yeah, definitely.
I do think maybe the writer's strike also potentially, along
true.
With
true,
things like COVID or stuff like that, induces a bit of interest. Like, oh, we just, you know, we've got our payday, so let's go back to what we do, like, bit feel passionate about now.
Yeah.
Because of our improved rate and reluctance to basically get replaced so easily.
Yes, that's true. And, like, last year we saw there was a bit of a cinema drought because of the writer's strike.
Oh, it kind of, so that was the kind of, the cycle went round and we started to...
And if the footage was out, if each film, say, production is like 8 to 12 months, this is the result of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So look, chaps, we could talk about this all day. I just want to hear a bit about Fantastic Four, Nick, from you. There's another summer blockbuster. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a bit about the Christopher Reeve Superman, which we've all watched. But no, Nick, tell us about the Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four was another great movie. I'm already a self-proclaimed, like, nerd. MCU, DC, DCU now. There's something about, like, this particular Fantastic Four, which I've really enjoyed. And that's just sort of like their feeling of family that they have around them. They've picked actually really great actors. Again, camaraderie, chemistry is there. Like in... Ebon Moss Bacharach, who plays the Thing, and he's also in The Bear as well. I haven't seen him in anything, but he just, like, he sort of plays himself in a really good way. Like, he's just so down to earth. Like, he's got this like Jersey, like old New York accent, and he shares his heartwarming tale with everyone.
Yeah.
The villain's great. Even Silver Surfer, played by Julia Garner, I think her name is. Who's in Weapons as well.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Her. She's from Ozark.
Ozark. It just has like such a different feel to everything you may have seen already from the Marvel Universe. There's no extra reading to be done unless you really like that sort of thing.
Yeah, you can turn up and watch it.
It and not feel like you're misplaced or anything. I think with people who know the MCU, you know that already when it comes up with a quick subtitle being like, you know, Earth... It's like completely separate, but you know, still attached. And if you're a fan, you've got to stick around for the post credits, maybe the first one but not the second one. It's okay. Yeah, I think I gave it a 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
All right.
Nice.
Great movie. Check it out.
Yeah, nice. We'll do. And that's also Vanessa Kirby, who is just absolutely smashing it.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I never saw that. Well, I'm sure she's a great actress, but I've never really seen her like act like dramatically. I've seen her in... I think she was in one of the Mission Impossibles.
She was in one of the Mission Impossibles as a kind of arms dealery one. She was in a film called Mother, which I couldn't really bring myself to watch. So apparently very harrowing.
Is that the one with Jessica Chastain?
I'm not sure. It's about childbirth and...
Oh, maybe not.
The horrors of being a woman, which it sounds very important. It also sounds very grueling, I've been told. She's in that. But yeah, no, good for her. She's...
Yeah, no, all of them. All four of them. Joseph Quinn as well. Pedro Pascal. Pedro Pascal seems to be having a long year to be off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to hold his hand as well.
Right, and on that note, we'll be back shortly to have a quick chat about the 1978, I think, Superman. Welcome back to the August edition of the Podyssey. We're in a very hot studio here. But in honour of Superman reappearing in our cinemas, flying back into our cinemas, we have done one of our watch-alongs. We've all had a look at the 1978 original starring Christopher Reeve. And I've got to say, I'm going to dive in.
Go.
I really enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it. It's kind of... It's bigger and a bit more of a sweeping American epic than I... thought, you know, because it starts and it's kind of got like 1950s America and it's got him growing up in the corn bits and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting. It's like a bit of a template for all the superhero films we watch now.
Definitely.
It's got his origin story. He's a bit of a reluctant hero. Like, why can't I be normal? You know, it's got like kind of a wise, non-power kind of mentor, Aunt May type.
Yeah, exactly.
Characters around him, so yeah, I thought it was great. I thought Christopher Reeve was fantastic,
so good.
Really, really enjoyed it. What did we think of it, Nick? Let's go to
you
first.
Have you seen it before, and have you heard of it?
I've watched it twice this year. I watched it for the first time in February, as almost as like to prepare myself for this new one. I actually seen half of it beforehand, but like the DVD I had like was scratched. I couldn't watch the rest. I meant to like finally watch the rest of it. But I finally got around to it this year in February. And then when we said we're going to rewatch it, I was like, happily, because I love it. It's like one of my new favourite, like, kind of
discoveries. I had watched it, but it would have been like when I was a kid at maybe like Mark Hawking's 10th birthday party kind of thing. Remember thinking it was wicked, but probably spent half the film in his garden running around pretending to be Superman.
Yeah.
But
I really enjoyed it as well, actually. It's my first time ever watching it. And I'm quite ashamed I'd never got to see it before now, because it is one of the greatest superhero origin movies to come out of Hollywood ever.
And it's really brilliant, right?
Yeah.
It's really, really well done.
I think I actually sort of had low expectations.
I think I did.
Because of the period of time that it's, you know, that sort of Hollywood, it couldn't imagine some of the action even working, but it actually, there's no strings attached. So you can't see them.
I think what everyone remembers, yeah, is like the kind of you know, composite of him flying around, and that's kind of usually what everyone brings up. But like, there's still tons of, like you said, there's tons of scenes of him actually being like kind of flown around on strings, and they're very like well hidden. And there's also just tons of like practical miniatures. Like the whole Krypton scene is all miniatures, and like kind of the set design is like really, you know, immaculate in that like kind of old Hollywood way.
So let's mention Krypton. Marlon Brando appears as Superman's dad.
Yes.
For, let's say, 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Gets top billing.
An unreal amount of money. £4 million in those days.
Yes.
For that. It was absolutely crazy. And that's another thing I was gonna mention, actually. I've been hanging around with you lot too much. I've started to notice things about films that really no normal people should notice. I thought this film was quite brave, because everyone's taking their kids to see it. It's a blockbuster. It's Superman. It doesn't really start to be Superman for at least, like, I'm going to say an hour.
It is an hour, yeah.
Like, you know, you've got all the stuff on his planet, and then you got him growing up. I thought
that takes 20 minutes or so, the Krypton stuff.
There's so much bits that aren't Superman doing stuff.
We also, with Terrence Stamp, that doesn't come back through the whole movie. So, which I know will come back later.
Yes.
Still haven't seen the second or third, but I know they come back later. And he dons a costume straight out of Krypton as well. Like, he just flies out of there as Superman.
In the film The Fortress of Solitude, it's like about an hour. Yeah, there's about an hour of the origin, and then, yeah, you get that awesome shot of him, like, standing in the middle of the Fortress of Solitude, and he, like, again, practical, like, fully practical him on screen, is, like, flies off screen, and then it cuts straight into, like, 70s kind of gritty New York after, like, this hour of, like, kind of myth-making.
Which still, to this day, racks my brain how they clearly got, like, helicopter shots of New York and they've put the footage. They must have, because if it was 35mm film, literally just gone with scissors and cut rounded whole body.
It's so impressive.
I don't know how, honestly. I don't know. Or they, like, interlaid it and filmed them at the same time.
So it doesn't look naff at all.
I don't think so. There's this awesome shot where he, it's quite iconic, where he's, like, just visited Lois Lane at her apartment, which, by the way, I want to get to, because, like,
That's a great scene.
He, like, flies off, and then the camera pans around to, like, her door, and then Christopher Reeve's Clark Kent walks in. Yeah,
that's right.
It's still, like, really, really holds up. Like,
and he's still a bit, like, dishevelled, like, he's got his glasses down there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, here's a thing, then. I was trying to work out all the way through the film, if you're Superman/Clark Kent, because they are one and the same.
Yes.
I was a bit frustrated on his behalf that he can't just tell Lois Lane he's Superman. But then maybe that doesn't matter because he's Superman.
She figures it out, though.
She does.
She does figure it out. And I think that's what's great as well, is because not relying on the fact that she has to be told, she's figured it out for herself.
She's a great character, by the way. That's,
again, for 70s, probably a bit more forward-thinking.
You're so right. We've talked in a few of our watch-alongs, often the big massive elephant in the room.
So happens with the cops.
Yes.
Okay, I have to give her a chest compression.
Yeah, okay. So there's a big plus and a big minus to the Superman film. So what we're talking about here, listeners, is you notice crazy, crazy sexism in some of these early films. We saw it in Days of Thunder. Like, none of us could quite believe it.
That was wild.
That it was way through at the time. Big plus for this Superman. Lois Lane is probably got the most gumption of all the characters. She's one of the strongest characters. She's no Wally. Yeah, she's absolutely headstrong, brilliant, sort of pioneering character. But the thing it does have is that mad, mad thing where,
coming soon,
to try and distract the army while they nick a kind of nuclear weapon,
right,
they have a kind of 70s sexy woman, generic blonde lady.
She's Tess Marker, Lex Luthor's hench lady.
She's in the road, fainted, and the kind of joke / distraction is, oh, I have to give her mouth-to-mouth and give her a chest massage.
Massage, that's how they aimed it.
And it's unreal when you watch it. Like, you can't believe it got let through.
It's funny, because I kind of anticipated bringing... I'm glad you guys brought up Lois Lane being a really great character, because, I think this film... Superman 1 and 2 particularly, like, rework, because of, you've got this trifecta of Christopher Reeve, Margot Kidder, and Gene Hackman all giving, like, pitch perfect performances, like, literally not a note wrong.
Gene Hackman's great. Like, he's almost likable. If he wasn't trying to blow the world up and kill Superman, he's actually, like,
definitely
I
think that definitely the way Lois Lane's portrayed is very and even in the kind of flaws they give her, like, She smokes cigarettes and she's a little more, like, unruly.
Which is kind of New York in streetwise, isn't
exactly.
She?
And I think the fact that they didn't, like, shy away from that is, and they never say this in the film, it kind of shows you, because that's the reason that's why he loves her, because she's human. She's, like, so undeniably human, and that is the reason.
Yeah, Superman, that's interesting, because he's kind of perfect. Right?
Yeah. That is like kind of the ultimate kind of signifier of Superman's love of humanity and all of its, you know,
all of its flaws.
Yeah.
I like that.
And just that whole interview scene. So here's another interesting thing. So that interview scene is awesome, because the chemistry is amazing. It's really, like, quite funny, and it's like it's like genuinely quite like flirty in a, but not in a kind of.
You come at the first flight instance as well. That same scene.
Oh yeah, when you can hear her thoughts.
When hearing her thoughts, that is some of the like I don't know. That was
romantic.
My most enjoyable part.
That's my favorite scene of the film. Yeah, for sure.
Because it does feel so romantic. Yeah, like, it does actually feel like that. Can you hear my thoughts?
Yeah, but and then I thought it was interesting because we brought up that scene, which is it's like a bit of like gross pervy humor.
Yeah.
But I think I was saying this because I actually watched this with Sam because he was wanting to join us on the podcast, but time got
lazy, away. Too lazy.
Well, we watched it together, and I said to Sam, like, the fact that Lois Lane is clearly very enamored by Superman, and the fact that because Miss Tessmacher gets her redemption by saving him later on,
correct? Yes,
she takes the opportunity to kiss him. And he's like, why'd you do that? And she's like, well, I didn't think you'd let me later. And I was like to Sam, is it also quite progressive in that they've made him an object of desire in that sense as well? Like, because I don't think they don't really make James Bond like that.
No, he's in charge. He's not saying, why did you kiss me? He's like slapping women about and all sorts.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. So like making Superman kind of a kind of object of female desire in that way, is that kind of quite a... Or it might not be. Like, you know, I'm sure someone could be like... But it doesn't feel like...
I understand, I don't get what you mean.
It doesn't feel like the way they portray Superman is, like, kind of, a power fantasy. It's actually, like, a proper, this is what you should...
Well, this is where the acting comes in, right? So this is Christopher Reeve, because Superman is kind of all-powerful, flies, fights everybody, saves the world. He's actually a really innocent character, isn't he? Definitely. So in some ways, like, he's the opposite of like an alpha male type swaggering about figure. Like he's quite, I don't know, like the women are very much in charge of Superman.
Yeah, in a funny sort of way. I think it's interesting as well, like how, because we've talked about how different he makes Clark Kent, which is amazing. And there's that shot of him where he kind of feels like he's going to reveal to Lois Lane where he takes his glasses off.
Amazing.
His posture just completely changes and you just see the character transition. And by the way, it's funny you mention... Why doesn't he just tell her? Superman 2 is practically all about like his relationship and like the sacrifice he has to make in being Superman, I suppose.
The more conflicting side of the era.
Definitely. There's his performance is just so good.
It's brilliant.
It's like the bottom line.
So, right, chaps, we're nearly running out of time. I want to give you some quick facts found out about Superman, just because it's very rare that I know facts that you pair don't. You will probably know these. They are all from Google. But I want to drop these facts on you, and then we'll come back to any closing thoughts on Superman. Right, so here's one. Sylvester Stallone originally slated for the part.
Yes.
Can't imagine it would have not been the same film at all.
I don't know if you heard this as well. I heard someone say Marlon Brando kind of vetoed him. Because at the time...
Oh, interesting.
Because of, I think it was Rocky, people were comparing Sylvester Stallone to Brando. They were saying, like, oh, he's the new Brando. Apparently Marlon Brando was, like, notoriously petty and was like, don't...
He can't have been in this film in case he's better than me.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I think I agree with Brando there.
You're making wrong reasons.
Ultimately, right decision. We got the most perfect actor possible.
No wish.
Yeah.
This is a bit of a lame fact. Most expensive film ever made at that point.
Yeah,
cost $55 million, but made $300 million in the '70s.
That's crazy.
The box office
like nearly $1 billion. So I bet.
And the other thing I was going to say, I mean, is this a fact? We're scraping the barrel here, but I thought this was quite interesting. So the young Superman is played by a guy called Jeff East.
Yes.
And when Richard Donner, who directed the film, also directed Scrooge, big Christmas favourite of mine.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But when he watched it all back, he didn't think it was
the same.
They were similar enough. So Christopher Reeve went back and overdid all the voice.
Yeah.
Oh. So poor old, what was his name again? Jeff East, brings his mum down to the premiere. It's not his voice. Christopher Reeve has gone over his dialogue.
That is a bit of
a damn shame.
Yes, it is. But it does sort of make it. But yeah, great film. Final thoughts on it? I thought it was excellent.
It's one of my new favourite. Like this, and I have also watched... I've watched Superman 2, and I also watched Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut. Because I don't know if you guys knew this. They shot, and this is the reason Zod doesn't come back.
Yeah.
They shot Superman 1 and 2 back to back.
I did know this. Yeah, they cut,
Which is crazy unusual for, like, that time. It's like the first almost, like...
So that was my phone going off.
Sorry. almost like the first part one, part two sort of situation. But then Richard Donner, for studio being bad reasons, got like kicked off, and that's why there's a theatrical cut of Superman 2 and then the Donner cut, which I just think both, you can't go wrong with both. I actually think there's good in both.
I do want to check it out.
Because of my Christopher Reeve, Margot Kidder, and Gene Hackman being so good in both versions. This is like a new favorite discovery of mine. I love like old campy superhero films, you know, Spider-Man, the Tim Burton Batman, and this just fits right alongside those for me. I'm so glad. I watched it twice this year already. I'll probably watch it again at some point. I love it.
I look forward to seeing the second and third if I can, because you know, quite difficult to find on without even renting it. But it just makes you want to watch more of that sort of period of like films, you know, because it now, like, I had again sort of low expectations, like I was saying, but I feel like this is where it like originated from, and it shouldn't really downplay that.
Yeah, and also I guess it stands to reason you sort of, I don't mean you, I mean anyone, you have a bit of a thing of like older stuff's not going to be as good as stuff from now, film-wise.
I sort of think that.
I always, you know, just instinctively, it's not nothing, it's not no, based on anything, I just sort of assume it. Yeah. But then actually, if Superman's got a kind of peer, it's a bit like Jaws, you know, like Jaws,
yeah.
Old special effects,
sure.
Old film. But if you watch it, it's just
most effective,
incredible,
yeah. Dynamite.
I feel like Superman more belongs in that gang than it does in a sort of like slightly rubbish version of Superman.
Oh yeah, definitely.
DVD bin or something.
Yeah.
No, right. Yeah, I think it was masterful for what it is. It's a great film.
Well done to everybody involved if you're still alive. Right, that has taken us a long time, but rightly so because it was such a good watch along. We'll have to have a think about what our next watch along is going to be, but. We'll come back and we'll have a very quick roundup of things that are coming up in the next section. Okay, we've got a very quick amount of time to tell you what's coming up in the policy, but Roberto, there's a story off air. Roberto, quickly give us this Superman story, who's good.
Okay, so Richard Donner, director of the original Superman, met Gene Hackman to talk about being Lex Luthor. Gene Hackman has hair, moustache, and he doesn't want to shave either of them. Richard Donner's like, okay. So Gene Hackman gets the makeup chair. And Richard Donner's like, look, we'll sort the hair out. You can, like, it could be like a... That's why in the film, Lex Luthor has wigs and isn't bald, like, right till the end. But he's like, you need to shave your moustache. You can't be Lex Luthor with a moustache. And Gene Hackman was like, no, I don't want to do it. Apparently, Richard Donner, and I have verified this, Richard Donner was like, okay, if you shave your moustache, I'll shave my moustache as well. And Gene Hackman was like, okay, that seems fair. So the makeup people shave Gene Hackman's moustache, and then Gene Hackman turns to look at Richard Donner. And apparently Richard Donner just thwips a fake moustache off of his upper lip. And Gene Hackman was just absolutely baffled, like, and like apparently a bit rage-induced at the time, but has come to realise it was like the funniest thing, which I agree with.
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
That's excellent. Right. Okay, so chaps, we've talked a bit about what's coming up. We've talked about Superman, talked about Fantastic Four. Just pretty quickly, because we're nearly out of time, anything else coming up in the next month that you just want to highlight? People can, of course, check out all the listings online. Loads of good stuff, as always, but is there anything specific you'd like to
talk about? Specifically, I saw it again recently. Not again, but The Naked Gun, the remake, Liam Neeson.
The Liam Neeson, yeah.
Yeah, go check it out.
Is it funny?
Yes. And if for anything, Leslie Nielsen, Liam Neeson, LNs. You got to go for it.
Yeah, nice.
Nice. I'm going to bring up Eddington, which is the new film by Ari Aster, who gave us Hereditary, Midsommar, and Beau's Afraid. It's his new, I think, sort of biographical film starring Joaquin Phoenix and Pedro Pascal again.
God, he's busy, old he Pedro really Pascal.
Every corner of cinema, art house, mainstream, he's got it all covered.
When does he fit in a drink with Vanessa Kirby?
Exactly, yeah. Well, I mean, packed schedule, but... yeah, so we're showing that Sunday the 21st of September at 12:30 and Thursday the 25th of September at 7:30. Looks to be kind of a very serious kind of examination of 2020, kind of in all of its chaotic, in chaoticness even. I was about to say chaotic glory, but it wasn't very glorious, was it?
Yeah.
But that looks to be really interesting, and he's proven himself as a really great kind of modern filmmaker. So I highly recommend that.
I think I just want to make a quick highlight as well that's a September film, and that won't be on sale until Friday the 22nd. which one is when all the September films will come out.
Good stuff.
Yes. Most of them, anyway.
And very professionally done, I'll say. So, yeah, loads of good stuff to look out for. So, Superman, well worth a look. Naked Gun, well worth a look. Jurassic Park, well worth a look.
Weapons as well.
Weapons, well worth a look.
4th of August.
There you go. Loads of good stuff coming up. Chaps, thoroughly enjoyed that. Let's finish and get out of this boiling hot studio. Say goodbye, everybody.
See you later.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all. Thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at The Podyssey, you can email me at neil.roger@mix927.com. If you're talking about the show, you can film what you're talking about. Feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at The Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials, where they can both be found.